Hello, everybody. Welcome to Middle Eight Table Break.
Woo!
I am your future DM? Question mark?
Current DM now.
Well, but when this comes out, I like have the power, but not officially the power.
You officially have the power.
Yeah, because at the end of last episode, you were talking.
I passed the baton.
I have the power.
Anyway.
Scared.
Current DM, Danny Gutierrez.
Mm-hmm.
And joining me are my co-DMs, Alex.
Hi, hello, it's morning.
It's 10:30. And Ruben.
Hello there.
I wanna play a game.
Oh no.
It's gonna be one of those mornings. I'm drinking a White Claw.
Yes.
It's 10:30.
I've been up since 6.
Me too.
I woke up at 6, realized I forgot to take my meds last night, had to take them, but I take them at night for a reason, so I would, like, just faceplant it.
Promptly died.
Yeah.
It's a half-time, part-time death? Something like that?
Failed her con save.
I did. I failed my con save because I forgot to take my goddamn meds.
But speaking of saves, we're here to talk about the last terrace level of Malphid that we just experienced, run by Alex. We're gonna assault this woman with questions.
Please do.
Ruben, do you want to start with your questioning of Alex? First of all, how dare you?
It sounds like I'm on trial.
Second, where is she?
Yeah, if you are, if it does sound like she's on trial, I've been spending a lot of time in courtrooms, man. It's so many, like, you can now question the officer. Yeah, okay. It usually starts with, yeah, okay.
Okay, first thing. For those at home, because you can't see me, I am currently wearing a Powerpuff Girl t-shirt, but it's all the villains. You got the Rowdy Rough Boys, you got Mojo Jojo, you got him, if you know who him is.
Him?
The reason I wore it is because last time we talked about Alex's character creation, she said that she had accidentally made the Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Was Tara, Madame Polly, and Azura, in some sense, the remnants of those Powerpuff Girls.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, because I saw the influences, but I was like, they're not exact. Like, I see how you made the character tweak so that you don't come off very Powerpuff girly.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, now, here's the thing. I'm going to make the guess.
Ooh.
Azura is actually Bubbles. Tara is Buttercup. Tara is Blossom, and Madame Polly was Buttercup.
No.
Damn it.
Tara was Bubbles, Polly was Blossom, and Azura was Buttercup.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
Azura was the enforcer.
That makes sense, but she didn't seem like as aggressive.
She was going to be. If you guys had tried to fight her in the alley, she was going to kick your ass.
I was so scared of that.
Yeah, that's fine. Exactly. That's exactly how I saw it.
For that part, I had written in my notes that, like, I was not intending it to go to combat. It was not supposed to be a combat moment. I was a little bummed because I, just for the sake of plot, like, I had to kind of nerf her as a character, because she is a very powerful character. Eldritch Knights are nothing to fuck with.
Yeah.
No, it came off during the Madame Polly fight, because even, like, the darkness to the blind fighting and the booming blade, it was like, that's real cool. Scary, but real cool. Like,
well, and also just, like, as a fighter, like, getting to, like, action surge and second wind and, like, all those, like, cool, like, abilities that fighters get, like, she very easily could have, like, 1v4'd you.
Same reason why I made Naomi a fighter.
Yeah.
It's just, they're low-key scary. Like, everyone gives a lot of praise to the wizards and the spellcasters, but, like, bro, like, the fighters put it out.
Fucking hit you 7 times
exactly.
In one turn.
Yeah.
Also, so what? Now looking back, you brought up blind fighting, which I thought about after we recorded that episode with the fight. The encounter in the alleyway, there was a smoke bomb thrown. It didn't fucking matter.
Oh, she could have wrecked us still. She kind of let us get away.
Yeah, she did.
Wow. Okay. Wonder what that's about, ..
Well, she wasn't trying to fight you, but Elias had wanted
to. Well, Elias, out for blood as usual.
Yeah.
I feel like he was slightly more bloodthirsty on this level.
Yeah.
Well, it's because it was like the like sin incarnate that he was just like, he was just.
He was not about it.
No, yeah, absolutely.
On edge the entire time.
That was something that I was really, I really enjoyed seeing. Like, it was just like very true to character where he was just like, this is a den of sin. Everyone needs to die.
Also, Hag of Sin.
Hag of Sin, trademark. Let the sin begin.
Oh my god.
Hag of Sin.
It still makes me laugh.
Oh, absolutely. New Twitter bio. For sure.
Oh, man. So, my question for you.
Gesundheit.
Nice.
Gesundheit.
I'm good. Sorry.
Okay.
He has reloaded. my question for you is, what would have happened if the entire party failed that morning check?
Ooh.
Like, which one?
The one to, like, not give in to the temptation to do things.
Yeah,
so, I'll actually pull up the chart right now, real quick.
Because we almost lost a mom for, like, an hour. Like, who knows what he would have done.
So...
yeah, that. Like, yeah. The consequences of that.
Oh, no, that's the wrong fucking drive. Never mind. The premise of the, lust effect, it was based on how long you were in Cremalia.
Mm-hmm.
So that first check that you guys made, the DC was 5. Like, it was laughably low.
Great.
I just made it sound scarier than it was because I wanted to fuck with you.
It worked.
What was that? It was a Christmas save?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The only thing is that all of you had, like, things to kind of get around charisma save, so it kind of made it a little bit easier for you guys, because like all Siegfried had to do was go into a rage and it would have been dropped.
Right.
Of course.
I don't think I had anything.
You had, I mean, other than being an elf and being
you tweaked that.
I tweaked it so it kind of surpassed that, just because my thought process for that is that the effect was like a charmed effect, but it wasn't. It was a kind of something of my own creation.
Actually was pretty cool in my sense, because Bard has that counter charm ability, but it hardly gets utilized, because like in the middle of combat, like it's a whole action. It doesn't end the effect. It just gives the character advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I basically have to sit there and use my entire action to try to give you advantage,
right.
And you might not even pass. That's why, like, for as a bard, like having that, like, that's what I was asked. Does counter charm help?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, like it'll have them. Granted, there's like Siegfried failed still, but like I saved Amon from running out, which was like, thank God. Like, we almost lost Amon for an hour. Who knows what he would have done had he had been like unleashed? So that made my character feel more utilized in that sense.
One of the things that I realized for this particular level was that my combats weren't necessarily difficult. They just sucked out like a lot of like your action economy.
Yeah, they, for real. Like one of your encounters, like I had little to no spell slots left.
Yeah. So, and like, because the monsters themselves did not have very many hit points. Like the siren, for example.
Right.
Like, she was very easy if you got close to her to, like, Elias. Like, once he got close to her, he was able to take her out in, like, a round or two.
Mm-hmm.
But all the effects surrounding her made it a little bit more spicy.
Shout out to the Charisma Boys holding it down during the siren dead.
Oh, that was a rough one.
Yeah, and again, that one was just supposed to be like a middle, like mid boss fight. Like, it wasn't supposed to be like anything that scary. And I did not realize how scared you guys were until the very end.
What it was is when when I rolled that insight check and you got up and went and came and said, she literally said she doesn't seem as hurt as she seems, like, because Elias already hit her maybe twice at that point. And we're like, how does she look? And she's like, she's not as hurt as you may think. And I was like, yo, get the fuck out of there, bro. Like, she's gonna whop your ass right now. Like,
yeah, again, like, she didn't have very many hit points, but she had, she was immune to thunder damage. And everyone was hitting her with thunder damage. You hit her with thunder damage.
Yeah,
shatter
did nothing.
So shatter did absolutely fuck all. And then I think Elias did a thunderous smite, and I was just like, "You guys, like, it was fucking killing me because no one also rolled insight on anything about her, so I couldn't tell you. It was killing me."
Well, she came. She was like, "Oh, there's people here." Yeah. Fiona singing the chick. Well, you don't think I didn't catch that?
Literally, the first thing I thought of was the bird.
So yeah. Next question.
I'll go again. Could we have killed Azura? And what would have happened if we did?
I really didn't want you to kill
her. I really didn't. She was innocent.
You absolutely could have. I think she went down in the final fight.
She was Tasha's.
Yeah.
Oh, she was Tasha'd, yeah. You could have absolutely killed her. Mm-hmm. But I was really trying to impose, like, this, like, morality decision because, mm-hmm. like, she did not want to fight. Like, as the Volstrucker, she was obliged to what Madame Polly wanted to do. And so even though she kind of had to fight, you could tell that, you guys through insight checks could tell that she did not want to. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, she absolutely could have killed her. I think it would have made it, like, I wanted to impose in this level that your actions had consequences.
Right.
Because I think in the first one, especially after, like, the fight with Naomi where Elias nearly killed her.
Oh, yeah.
Or even just, like, how a lot of our characters acted in level one. Like, my thought going into level two was, like, actions have consequences. Mm-hmm. And you guys need to know that because and I thought that kind of came across when you guys killed Polly.
And that was kind of like the whole point of this was that, you know, that we wanted to have a drastic contrast, that each place had its own feeling. Yeah, you're all still on Malphite, but everything has a different feeling. And that's the kind of feeling I wanted for Limbo, was like, yeah, Limbo is a place of waiting. So even if you make drastic changes, the whole overarching world of that level doesn't really change. The mechanics are still the same.
Yeah.
That's why, like, even after the Madame Polly fight, I did feel like there was more gravity at the end of that fight versus after, like, fighting Randall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with Randall, we felt like things were changing, things were great, but after Madame Polly's, it was like, what happens for the place now?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, there was a whole thing about morality, which, you know, it's like, do we fight Azura? Do we kill Madame Polly? Do we take our time to convince Tara? There was a lot of different things that took our attention. So it wasn't just a straight up fight.
Yeah.
I think the thing with level one, too, with Limbo, was like, after killing Randall, he was immediately replaced with somebody that supposedly is controlled by a group we trusted.
Right.
So we didn't feel that weird about it. Where here, it changed hands from sister to sister. And, like, yeah, Tara was, like, good with us, but, like, we don't know how she is.
She's not good,
like,
with us now.
We don't know how she's going to be after. Like, she could be a fucking tyrant, and, like, we don't know.
Yeah, she's a very high-level cleric, too. So, I'm curious to see how that plays out. I have a question for you guys.
Oh.
How did you guys feel about the presence of the mainstay Marauders on this level in comparison to Limbo?
I felt like they were more shifty. I think that came across in Richard's actions was like, well, for one, he didn't have that much contact with them from Limbo, but, I mean, he was kind of going off the party. The party said, hey, these guys are cool, so Richard was with it. But when we kind of, you know, even when the whole thing with the ledger, he's like, hey, this tickles me a little bit. Like, there's something weird here. And I think he voiced that pretty well at the end, like, because of their actions, like, the whole thing with Madame, like, their lack of foresight caused this whole action. So Reuben was mistrusting of the Marauders a whole lot.
Okay, yeah, that was kind of something that I wanted to play around with on this level. Not necessarily and this isn't me saying that the Marauders outright were, like, bad on this level. I think one of the struggles of the mainstay Marauders is it's difficult to communicate between levels. It's next to impossible, right? Unless you have Dom.
Mm-hmm.
I think making some levels weaker than others, because, for example, people on Lust in Carnalia couldn't really even stay there very long without being possibly susceptible to the lust effect, right? So I kind of wanted to play around with that, where it was less organized as opposed to Limbo, where it was very like almost militaristic, versus Carnalia, where it was like a little bit more just like, we're just trying to do something.
Yeah, it gives it less of a black and white feel, and like you said, Limbo felt more like more of a militia. And while Carnalia felt like a group of ragtag rogues, it did make it feel a lot different, which I appreciate. That's, again, the whole point of this is give every level its own feel, and I feel like that came across real well on this one.
Cool. Yeah, I was just curious about that, because I didn't want you guys to feel like I was like, this is the mainstay Marauders now, but on this level, that's kind of what I envisioned for them.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, the communication between levels, it makes it a bitch, so they're all going to be funky. Mm-hmm. I like that. Like, even looking at other levels that I'm going to DM, like, the way I was looking at one, like, the other one's going to be completely different, just because why would they all be the same?
Right.
And it'll get boring.
Well, also, especially considering that their leader is considered dead now, so there's bound to be like shifts of disorganization.
Yeah, highly disorganized. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'll take the next one. So the group feeling from Zaris leaving and Richard coming in. How do you think the loss of one character and the addition of the other character, or vice versa? How do you think that affected the party dynamic?
I think it literally went from like a group that was kept, like we've been saying the whole like level was kind of kept level headed with Zaris there, because she brought like a logic to, like, not saying that Richard didn't bring logic, but he like kind of was more okay with the shenanigans, and it was like the cool dad hanging out with like, his kids and his friends, and watching them do dumb things, and like I don't know.
letting the kid do what he wants, but making sure he doesn't die.
Yeah, like the kid builds a ramp in the front yard out of like plywood and bricks, and he's like, "This is probably a bad idea." Like, but I'm gonna watch
again. Your analogy with the ramp, it's like the dad's watching the kids. They build the ramp. The kid goes on the bike on the ramp and like falls off, breaks his arm. Mom gets home like, "What happened? I thought you were watching him." Like, I watched him break his arm.
That's exactly what it's like.
Zaris showed back up, and everyone is just like emotionally devastated. But it's just like, oh my god, you're back, which is so funny, because like the way I have Zaris, like she has like a one track mind. Like, she's not necessarily like focused on like babying this group of people.
Yeah.
I didn't think she necessarily brought a logic or like a groundedness to the group until she left.
I think it's the no bullshit mindset.
Yeah, or like, that too.
Yeah, it cuts the fat off the fillet, if you will.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I noticed like almost immediately, like first, second episode, like the Hall of Arrows, just the Scooby-Doo bullshit trying to sneak out. I was like, this is drastically different. Because like the whole overarching feeling was a bit more serious than Limbo, but then like our inter-party relation felt like real. It's like, what, like she thinks I'm out cheating, but me and the boys out here doing something stupid. Yeah. Like that's what it felt like.
That's exactly the vibe. And then Zaris is just like, I have to go find this man. So good.
We're like, good luck. Anyways, how do we fuck around?
And guess what? You guys fucked around.
We
found
sure
out.
Fucking
out.
Did.
Oh my god. Speaking of Zaris leaving to find this boy, what if Elias or Amon brought attention to Dom, like, in that first scene at the thing? Because he said, don't tell her, and I immediately thought Elias was gonna do something.
Oh.
I was like, oh, fuck, he's gonna, like, do something to get her attention, or, like, fucking stand up and lift the table with him so it causes a scene and makes her look.
I feel like
I hadn't considered like the possibility of that.
I feel like the cards kind of distracted him from that.
Because
I feel like there was an intent. I felt that too. I felt like there was an intent for Elias to be like, well, Zaris is my comrade. He has kind of this unspoken bond with Zaris because she talked him down from his quote-unquote dream.
Yeah.
So like, why wouldn't he?
Yeah. So that was the thing. I was like, I don't think Amon enjoys being around Zaris and they have a good relationship, But, like, I think in that moment, he was very curious about how this dude works and, like, how he got to them without being seen. Like, immediately he's like, oh, fuck, this dude's sneaky as hell. Like, I can dig that. But Elias, I was like, oh, my God, he's going to say something. And I was like, man, what happens? Like, if he flips a table or just screams Zaris's name and, like, now she has eyes. And, like, she has pretty high perception, right?
Oh, yeah, she is. Her wisdom is pretty
high. She's wise.
So... I want to know what would have happened, because I feel like that would have ended, that could have been like a Zaris like snap moment where she just tries to get wild with him, not even try to kill, just capture, but like crossfire.
I don't know necessarily how she would have reacted in that moment, because like she has no interest in like drawing attention to herself or other people in that moment. She just wanted him. And I think she knows that there's a time and a place, as even as just like as like a fighter and a warrior. Like I think she knows she's just like, I'm not gonna do it here, which is why when she found out, like I think in my head she probably got eyes on him leaving, but she didn't like do anything inside the building and like tried to get him outside.
In your head.
In your head.
Zombie.
Zaris.
Well, now we're gonna have now we have a new cover. So many covers.
We're going through them.
Yeah, you guys have any other questions? I have a few, but we'll throw these
Mine's more of a like towards the end discussion question.
Do you want to talk about the map or talk about?
I was absolutely going to bring that up next. Where did you get the idea of this from, and why is it?
So he's holding up the potion just
for the multi-potential.
Yes. So I knew that I wanted to make a potion, like, because I have these little bottles just for my own little like witchcraft stuff, and I wanted to make potions. Like, so in one of my home games, my DM, who's my stepdad, really, really likes doing physical props.
He gets down
in his games.
Oh yeah.
And that was a really big inspiration for me when I was going into this, because I was trying to think of ways to kind of make the game a little bit more immersive for you guys. Like, I know that this is a podcast and like people can't see it, but for you guys at the game, I still want you guys to have just as much fun.
We can post a picture of it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
It looks dope.
So I had this thought of like, well, how would I make a potion? What would it look like? And I had this idea because I have like sealing wax. So I was like, oh, I'll just seal it with like red. And then I was like, it's the lust level. I could get pink luster dust and just make it like this shimmery pink. And
is that what it is? Luster dust?
That's what it's called. Yeah.
Luster dust.
Yeah, I know.
Luster dust.
Yep. So that's how I got the idea for that, how I got ideas for, like, the handouts, so, like, the map, for example, just something physical for you guys to hold on to. And then it wasn't until, like, I want to say, like, 2 minutes before, we started that I decided what I wanted the potion to actually be, because initially I was just going to make these, like, just health potions.
That's what I thought they were at first, yeah.
Just to make them a little bit more spicy. Like just like lust themed health potions. But then I was just like, you guys have been going through it lately. So I decided to change them to possibility potions, which it is homebrew from Critical Role. I just wanted to shout that out now that it's something that's in Wizards of the Coast. Like, it is a Wizard of the Coast official thing, but it is a homebrew from Critical Role. So I'm excited to see how you guys use them. For sure.
Luster dust.
Dude.
He's stuck
on it. But yeah, so I'm really glad you guys liked them as much as I had fun making them.
They were super cool when you pulled them out. It definitely added tangibility to what we were doing.
So, yeah, I'm glad you guys liked them. They were very fun.
So speaking of things you handed out.
Yes.
I'm currently holding La Map.
She also handed out some ass whoopings.
Yeah. That. So there are areas of this map we didn't go to. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't go to Sweet Surrender Cafe, Whispers Club, The Sanctuary, The Dark Corner. We didn't go to the Siren's Cove, did we?
Nope.
Nope. and we didn't go to the Enchanted Boudoir, which I think would have been a problem for Siegfried. But like, if we wanted to go to either of these places, would it have like altered what could have happened, or like what?
Those were all side quests, basically. Oh, okay. Like there was nothing like that. You guys pretty much did the main story straight through.
So if we go back, it could just wreck all these.
If there's ever a Malphite 2.0, he's like these places exist now.
Yeah. So all of those places, I pretty much had a time just sitting down thinking of just like, what's a sexy place? Like,
yeah. And I think that also adds to it too, because we are like building a world and building a story, but like when, like in video games, they very much incentivize you to go to every place on the map.
Right.
In real life, you don't do that. When you go on vacation, you're like in Paris. You try to see all the big things, but you don't go to every single location. Right. Yeah. There's just not enough time in the world. So that's why I always felt like it felt lived in. Like, unlike Limbo, that just kind of had a forest and a civilization populace, which again was the intent. But like, again, it's fleshing out that level. Mm. That's...
I wanted to tell you guys so bad about what each of these places are and what, like, what's there, but, like, now that, like, there's... I mean, I don't know if there's a possibility of us going back, but, if we do, so I'm gonna keep it to myself for now. But I did base this map off of... Or I did take this map from a book.
Excellent.
That's the only reason. That's why everything's, like, washi taped out.
Is it Boulder's Gate?
No, it's not. It's from a book.
Oh, it's random. It looks awfully familiar. No. What book is it from?
So it's a map of Ketterdam from Six of Crows. Okay, for those who are listening.
No idea.
And I figured it would be a good way to get a map of something without making a map of something.
It worked.
And then I just like labeled out all the actual places and like blacked out other things that I didn't need, and it worked out well. So yeah,
hell yeah,
I'm glad you guys liked it. I had a lot of fun making it.
Yeah, it's great.
And then I bought laminate pages, so it's also laminated. I laminated a lot.
I'm pretty sure we would have ruined this if it wasn't laminated. Yeah. So good
call. I would have ruined it just holding onto it.
Oh man. So, ma'am, do you have any questions for us?
What was so scary? Because here's the thing. This is my second time officially DMing ever.
Uh-huh.
And the first time it was a horror, one shot, and I didn't intend to make it as scary as it was. And I kept getting comments on how terrifying the whole thing was. Because I was trying to make it scary. This one, I wasn't even trying to make it scary, and I was sitting there and I was just like, they're expecting spooky stuff from me. It's not that spooky. And then afterwards, everyone was just like, this is terrifying. So, is it just the right, like, I don't know. I would love feedback on that.
I think what it is that you, like, subconsciously, you add the illusion of choice to a lot of things. Like, the first thing you did was hand a deck of many things to somebody. Like, and granted, like, I think you even said during the podcast, like, it was just meant to have to be an item.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the illusion of choice there. It's always something. Uh-huh. And then the illusion of choice, when you don't know what your options lead to, adds suspense. So it's always like, well, could we not? What's going to happen if we do? What's going to happen if we don't? Like, I feel like that, like, the not knowing, like, the fear of the unknown leads to a lot of suspense.
Okay. Yeah. I fucks with that.
I think specifically the unknown morning rolls was terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, because, and it wasn't even like, we knew what was going to happen. We do what we really want to do. And, like, kind of scatter.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think the idea of, like, Amon was like, he was going to go out and, like, just get rich. Or at least, he's going to get rich and die trying. Because like, he's going to get caught. Like,
yeah.
I feel like there's no way he doesn't get caught, because I feel like, let's say he didn't save and, like, I was gone for an hour and, like, Alex has me kind of narrate this story, I feel like I would have almost disadvantage on, like, these stealth and sleight of hand rolls after a while, because he's just so, like, full of himself. Cocky, at that point. Yeah. Yeah, and, like, he doesn't think he needs to get that hype, which would make sense to me. But, like, what was really scary for me is, what would Elias do?
Yes.
Because if he wanted out, I think he would have just left. Like, because I feel like that's what he wanted the most. Like, he, even from the beginning, mm-hmm. he was like, well, then let's leave.
Well, that was something, you, yeah, from the very beginning, like, you guys were just like, well, we could just stay, play the rules, like, play by Madame Polly's rules and yeah. leave in the morning, which you very well could have done, which would have made a, like...
two episodes,
The shortest series.
Yeah.
The shortest, yeah.
Imagine if the Marauders came to Elias and he's just like, nah.
I was fully prepared for that possibility. It just would have made ascending a lot more difficult and a lot more deadly.
Yeah. 5 days in the forest.
Like, it, that occurred to me when Elias said that. He was, or Connor, I guess, was just like...
I don't know, they blend together a little bit.
when he was just like, why don't we just leave? Or I think it also could have been Siegfried, too, who was just like, we could just leave. And I was just yeah. like, ah, beans.
Ah, beans. I also, I'm curious now, what Richard would have, like, what he have done?
Honestly, no idea. Because I don't want to give too much about his character quite yet, but his character motivations are kind of, what he wants doesn't mesh with his environment.
Right.
So he can't do what he truly wants to do in Malphite. So, I don't know. Like, it would have had to have been on the spot, like, maybe he would just played music very loudly and just, yeah. like, been a fucking nuisance the entire time. Because I feel like that's the only thing he could have done that's tangible, like, within his reach right now.
Right.
Well, also, at a point after Zaris leaves, like, they would have just left Zaris.
Yeah. That's the thing, too. If we just left right away, we probably would have left her behind.
Yeah.
So, but also, that's why I tried giving you guys the map early, so it could have evoked some sense of, like, interest. So, yeah. Even if you guys didn't follow, like, what I initially had planned... and this is an interesting thing as a DM where it's like, it's railroading without railroading,
mm-hmm.
Where it's like, if you guys had decided to completely ignore the mainstay Marauders and was like, no, you guys are up to some shifty shit, like get fucked, and decided to stay, but then got interested in like other things from the map. Like, I would have tied you back into the original yeah. plotline. Well, like,
and even then, too, like, the mainstay Marauders weren't shifty until after we had the book.
Yeah, that's
At
true.
At first, we had, like, no reason to doubt. She had the letter from the captain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was shifty, but I didn't want to say anything because I was like, he dead. How do you know?
But, I got that from before.
Yeah, so that's why, like, maybe from before, but, yeah. like...
It's that shred of doubt, like, okay, maybe yeah. this, yeah.
But also, we had no reason to doubt. Mm-hmm. Like we were saying, we know Dom can get messages up for them pretty easily, but we don't know when the last time it was that he saw them.
Yeah, well, also, he has so many levels to be...
He's a busy
yeah.
man.
He's a busy man. He's got shit to do. He's
doing things for himself.
He's giving decks of many things to unsuspecting adventurers.
Oh, my God. All right, so speaking of that...
We can talk about it?
I'm so glad I could bring it up. No, I'm not even going to bring up the cards yet. Your questionnaire. Now that we're at the end of your
yeah.
level...
Oh, yeah.
The one question I thought... I assumed I knew the answer to was... I can say it, right?
Sure.
So one of the questions was, which character do you not trust the most? And I was like, I guarantee you...
It was which character
you...
would you turn on?
Oh, it was? Mm-hmm. I was like, I guarantee you it's going to be me.
Do you have everyone's results?
I do have everyone's results.
We're going to air it out right now.
You want me to air it out?
Absolutely, because I don't remember what I put.
I honestly don't remember what I put. Was it? Cause I thought it was the one you, like, you think would turn on you or would, like, you don't trust. It was something where I was like, oh, fuck.
Oop.
Your little dude's beeping.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. This is all going to get cut anyway because I have to pull it up.
Good timing. What is happening? It's not supposed to be beeping right now. New what? What the fuck?
You gave birth?
Yo! No, it joggerist. Which means I had two on here
uh-huh.
that I didn't think that could... They basically fused, like, Ooh. Without telling me. Like, I didn't think they could fuse. I just had both of them because I thought they looked dope. But apparently they confused together. Holy shit, it's a monster now.
Okay, so right now, if your character were to turn on another member, who would it be?
Who?
By overwhelming results. Yeah. It's Elias.
What? Oh, but he was like hot-headed over in the.
Yeah, this was at the end of Limbo.
Yeah.
One person said Euamon.
Oh.
Who was it?
I don't. I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, don't throw it out there. But damn.
What were the other questions? I don't remember.
So a lot of them I was going to incorporate, but I decided not to. It ended up being more of a character development opportunity for you guys.
It did. I did. Yeah. I did feel that.
So yeah, what's a secret your character is keeping about themselves from the party? What does your character want more than anything? Right now, if your character were to turn on another member, who would it be?
Wow, okay.
If your character could only eat one kind of food for 20 days straight, what would it be? This was going to be something I was going to implement with the lust effect. Oh. So I was going to say, you want this. Like, this is the only thing you want. Like, you know. And then bonus, what does your character want their legacy to be?
Now that we've... This was at the end of Limbo. Do you think that dynamic has changed now since the end of Carnalia?
Like,
who... As far as, like, who everyone thinks they would most likely...
Turn
on.
See, I
feel like now... Amon, like, after, because I mean, obviously, I had to pick fucking Elias if I didn't, unless I voted for myself, but,
I would turn on me.
Suddenly, Amon hates himself.
Same.
But, like,
Blast,
going a little too hard. I don't think Amon would really turn on anybody in this party now, like, especially after everything. Mm-hmm. I think if he absolutely had to, and they were like, hey, we need to stop Elias because he's on some blind rampage under some, like, charm spell. Then, like, all right, fuck, I'll help, like, chill him out. But, like, I don't think he'd, like, try to kill him. Especially non-lethal. On the way up, like, good shit, non-lethal. My guy. Like, proud of him.
I love that you were the one to hype him up after everyone basically just, like, gave him a verbal spanking.
Dude, I'm not trying to die, like... You gotta do what you gotta do.
Well, and, like, I know everyone was, like, giving him shit, but, like, he was staying true to character. And, like, mm-hmm. I have so much respect for that.
Yeah, like, well, I feel like the difference... Siegfried was like, yo, next time you do that shit, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah.
I feel like Richard was kind of trying to father him a little bit.
Yo, totally.
Yeah. And it wasn't the intent at first, but I feel like once I got running, it kind of sounded like that.
Siegfried is just like, get in my way again, I will fucking kill you.
Yeah, and that was like, because again, the dynamics changed a little bit. They were kind of like on the same page, on the same level. Yeah, Elias was a little hot-headed, but now we're getting a little bit farther where Siegfried is less trusting of Elias. Like, you even made that fact, like, Elias said, do you trust the rogue to make the decision here, the hot-headed rogue who jumped on a dragon? He was like, well, I trust his decision making more than the guy who wants to kill everyone.
Yeah.
So, like, we see it, the party dynamics tweaking a little bit, and it's fun.
I enjoy it. I also enjoy that Zaris somehow became, like, the peacekeeper.
I think it's her no bullshit attitude that kind of gives everyone the same. Her energy is infectious. Yeah. It gives everyone else, like, a no bullshit attitude.
Yeah.
And I think maybe now that we're going into the next level, we see it kind of going the other way. Because, like, she's been getting a little bit sillier now. Like, the whole thing's with the goblins when we're going up the ivy wall and stuff. Like, it seemed a little bit more sillier than Zaris usually is.
It was very, like, she I think, is starting to... I think, if from my perspective with Zaris, this was the first time that anyone had actively missed her.
Oh.
And so I think that was actually something that meant a lot to her, that people actually gave a fuck that she was gone.
And it was kind of a, dare I say, a cute moment when Zaris shows back up. And of course she goes to Amon, because she's like, I know you would be up.
Yeah.
And it's like, you guys had your little pow on, like, you want to play some cards? Like, it was like... You know, the characters aren't really, like, friends, but at that point, it was, like, I don't know, it was real nice.
I think that they are, though, because, like, basically every, like, they basically spend 4 hours together every single night.
Right.
And, like, they've bonded over being, like, elven, and they've bonded over being, like, just kind of, I mean, in the beginning, especially in the very beginning parts of Limbo, kind of bonding over having, like, that no bullshit kind of attitude about stuff.
Like, wanting out at the end of the day.
Yeah, so I think Zaris feels... fondly about Amon.
Yeah, I don't think Amon has anything against this party, but he does enjoy like spending time with Zaris when he does. It's nice.
So how cute.
I know.
You guys seen that meme where it's the close-up of the penguin's face and it's just like the eyes in the dark and it's like the elf when the rest of the party's asleep.
It's like, two
oh
elves.
Oh my god, this is how it's like.
Just by yourself?
Just staring.
Wishing you could talk to Chuck, but he's also...
Because everyone else needs 8 hours. Us elven folk need 4, but yeah.
Yeah, even the hobgoblin one, he needs to take a big sleep.
Take long rest.
Longest rest.
Damn it.
Oh my gosh.
I got to do so many southern accents this last episode. Hi there!
And Chuck.
Yeah. Sup, bud?
Oh my gosh.
Any other questions, guys?
Yeah, I got one last one on my end. Favorite, one single part, one single instance, what was your favorite part?
Of the second level?
Of the whole second level, yeah. Whether it be, like, actual combat, shenanigan that happened on the side. Like, if there was one part that, like, when you think of the group in Carnalia, what comes up? What did we say? What was the last thing we said? The gaggle of goons?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to stick, but, like, seemed to be...
It fits the theme. Cool. Sorry. Almost fell because my ankle popped.
He almost died.
Yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
For me, I think my favorite moment was climbing the ivy wall.
Yeah?
Like, it was rough, but, like, there was this moment of just, like, communal, like, ah, fuck.
Yeah.
where it seemed like everyone was, like, everyone seemed really zoned in and focused on helping each other.
Yeah.
And... That was very cool to see. It also, like, was a moment where everyone was together, including Zaris, because Zaris was able to come back. Or Zaris was back at that point. So having, like, everyone together.
Yeah.
Like, that was cool to see.
The group climbs at Ivy Wall.
The gang. Yeah. The gang ascends.
Yeah.
Every time between levels, just the gang ascends.
Again. Yeah, no, I thought that was cool also. Having the whole, again, like, the gangs all back together.
Yeah.
I also, like, just, I think most of this last episode, I think, went, like, really, really well. I liked Zaris returning and everyone kind of having, like, just, there was a lot of really solid RP moments. I think everyone's, like, really settling into, like, RPing with each other, and like, I'm loving that shit. Like, seeing everyone just talk, like, as a DM, being able to just sit back and let you guys run that shit, it's so fucking cool to see.
That's the best part of being DM, when you don't have to, like, lead people into it, and they just do it themselves. Like, I know for the audience, you guys are literally listening to audio medium, but, like, for the DM, like, you literally take your hands off the fucking mat and just you're watching a movie in sense.
Let your computer hit that screensaver.
Yeah,
and you're like,
exactly.
Oh, it's been a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're watching people, like, granted, we're not actors, but, like, you're watching people act. It becomes real in that moment. And that's, like, one of my favorite parts as a DM is just letting loose and let the characters be their characters.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome, yeah. So being able to be on the other side of that was really cool. Like, so there were a lot of really solid RP moments. Me getting odd, like, getting, like, way more emotional than I was intending on getting emotional during Polly or during Tara's, like, final, like,
speech.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can feel it, yeah.
I was just like, oh, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry.
But it had that gravity at the end. Like, it was... Like, again, like, comparing to Limbo, it wasn't that, like, okay, all's well, it ends well, is, you know, we did the job, everything's good, we're gonna ascend. Like, this was, like, you know, someone who maybe not necessarily needed to died, and then someone was sick, because no one cried about Randall. Randall died, and everyone was like, yes, fucking Randall's dead.
Yeah.
With the existence of Tara and Azura, it kind of gave it more of a melancholy feel, like... This might have been something that needed to happen, but other people paid for it.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, because I wanted to mention that. Making these characters, because we were talking about this when I was in, like, pre-production, but, like, I, like, became emotionally attached to these characters. Polly, like, we didn't really even get into it, but, like, Polly was a wizard.
Yeah.
And, like, she had, like, had all this cool stuff that, like, we never really got to explore, which is totally fine. I wasn't anticipating it. But, and Tara's a cleric. And I got, like, really into, like, backstories and, like, what their whole motivations were. And, like, before I knew it, I was like, these are supposed to be the bad guys, and I'm emotionally attached to them.
Which is, makes a good villain.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it made it rough when, like, at the end, exactly what you said, where it's just, like, not everyone was just like, fuck yeah, we killed the bad guy, because it was just, like, it was a shade of gray. And playing with that was so fucking emotionally rewarding.
Right, and that's why, I don't know if people noticed, but, like, Richard did a lot of the talking at the end, because, yeah. Like, at the end, we were sitting there quiet for a little bit, like, no one knew what to say.
I felt a little bad, because after my impassioned, like, Tara's impassioned, like, fuck you guys, leave my city.
Yeah.
I think you said you were like, well, this got sad, and I felt so bad.
It got sad.
Yeah, like, it was good, though. Like, it I brought felt all so the bad. Feel. We should have. Did we keep any of that silence?
A little bit of it.
It was longer than whatever we kept.
Yeah, whatever was in the last edit, it was much longer than that. And that's why the only reason why you hear Richard talking so much is because, like, I was low-key like, all right, we got to move the plot along. We've been here for a little bit. And I don't know. I just thought it was... It wasn't your run-of-the-mill D&D encounter, which I think is the whole point of this. We're trying to tell a story, but also make an entertaining game. So it's like, you're going to get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I feel like we hit it well there.
Yeah, no, I felt good about it. But then also, at the same time, I felt really bad because everyone got, like, really quiet and sad. And I felt like I, like, killed the vibe. And I was just, like... I felt also kind of proud that I was able to evoke an emotional response like that.
No, but it was also, I think, like... Even, like, so all the Siegfried, Richard, and Amon were kind of like, oh, fuck, he killed her. But also, like... Thank God this is done, because we're gonna die. And I think Elias was the one who was like, fuck yeah, he was hyped. And then your speech, and it wasn't like the killed vibe, it was the reality check to the whole party, that everybody was like, oh fuck, we, like, for that hot second we forgot about everything that happened before this.
Yeah, and we're leaving, because again, Limbo, we knew we improved things. We're leaving Carnalia not knowing if things are better. Like, yeah, Metal Poly was a tyrant in some way, but, like, who knows what kind of person Tara is going to be, especially after
she's done... The death of her sister?
After she's done grieving, yeah, because I think even Richard kind of said it a little bit in his conversation with Elias, like, humans tend to think about things a lot.
Uh-huh.
And the more you think about things, the more... marinates.
Yeah.
So who knows? But, like, if we maybe, like, in the future, we might hear that Carnalia is way worse now.
Yeah.
Like, Tara runs it with a holy fist. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
Not to get off the original question, but was Brick a character you had made, or did you do it on the fly?
I made Brick.
Yeah?
Yeah. Brick is an actual character.
It's fucking phenomenal.
Brick might show up later, because I absolutely want to bring her up again at some point, because, like, that is a character that I've made.
Ramon's old friend, Brick. Because Ramon's the only one who met Brick.
Yeah.
Yeah. He went on a spree with Brick.
Well, it was just like, you're just, like, rolling to, like, find someone to, like, go out on the town with.
Yeah. Hey, you want to show me the town and, like, rob people? Like,
and you found a fucking barbarian.
A barbarian halfling.
Yes.
Named Brick.
Brick Framdor, yeah.
That's for some reason, it fits perfectly.
So good, but, like, I was just talking to the original question on that. I had, like, four favorite moments.
Yeah?
That was number four.
Okay.
Because it was just a silly moment where Amon got to go be dumb for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, like, we got introduced to this character.
I'm glad you guys loved Brick, because I love Brick.
My third favorite was everybody had a roleplay moment with Elias.
Yeah.
And it was different
levels
of speak. Like, even, like, Amon talked to him in the Hall of Arrows in the beginning. Siegfried and Richard both talked to him in between and, like, after the fight. So that was cool. Part two was your speech at the end, where it just reality checked everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my literal favorite moment was Elias finally, like, nope, she dies.
Yeah.
And fucking hits her. Like,
All through the fight, every time he said non-lethal damage could not hit her.
Yeah. And he rolled like 3 different d20s.
Yeah. I thought that was, again, the dice tell the story.
Yeah, it was great.
From a personal level, my favorite parts were the double nat 1 that killed my box.
Oh my god.
That was...
Oh no. Do it again. Oh no!
And I felt bad to be like, your box is gone.
No,
you put an explosion, like a box exploding.
I put a box breaking noise, yeah. And then even when you're... And then Amon was like, but is there loot? And I put a little, like, ding, coin ding. Noise. Yeah. So, and then... So the box is floating. The return of the box. Electric
return
Boogaloo.
Return of the box.
Yeah.
I think it's like box part 2. Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
God damn it.
The dream sequence for Elias I really liked. Because we also really did not get an answer for that. He just had a dream.
There wasn't supposed to necessarily be one. I have... thoughts that I'll talk to you guys off mic about for
it's
what I...
It's a secret.
It's secret DM bullshit.
That's.
That I wanted. Secret DM bullshit. Secret DM bullshit.
Schmeagle?
I could get down there at some point, just not for a long time. Please don't sue us.
The Tolkien estate is just like, lawsuit.
Oh shit, they're already here!
I pulled up Brick's like character sheet. I'm like, oh, I love her! No, yeah, so she's a real character.
She has a great axe, right?
Yeah.
Yes!
Yeah, it's a stout halfling with a great axe.
I fucking love it.
It's like almost as big as her.
Yep. Just swinging.
You!
I feel like on a miss, she flies like 20 feet through her
face. Like, she has to just do a spin to hit, yeah. And like if she misses, it spins all the way around like a top. She's a little Beyblade. Let it rip, Brick.
It's literally Link in Smash Brothers when like you do the up B move, huh? And you just so she can jump and add 10 feet to
it. Exactly.
Anyway, what was I saying?
Holy shit, not to be intrusive, but I can see your laptop and I see the large list of characters you have.
Yeah.
You were talking about Brick being you're looking at her character sheet.
Oh yeah, that was it. I just wanted to mention that I pulled up her character sheet.
What was it? There was one other part that I really liked. I don't know, I think what was it, the second episode? Just the whole sneaking into the Siren's Den?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I thought that, it sounded silly, but I just like the whole, granted, we were like, second episode of Mimosa...
Of D&D, oh, of Mimosa D&D?
Yeah, Mimosa D&D,
we're
so like...
We're not doing it again. Huh? We're not doing it again.
You guys...
At least not
do it with less,
models.
Yes.
I've gotten apologies since then, because that was my first time DMing for this podcast, and ever. And I was just like, wrangling cats...
I know I am.
Wrangling drunk cats.
We. I know I apologized to early. Hey, we were pretty fucked up. I'm like, sorry. I'm pretty sure the other goons are also like, hey, we got kind of wild.
Sorry, we were so
But again, that kind of like diversed it from the Zaris party to the Richard party.
Yeah.
And Richard party is definitely. And subconsciously. Yeah, subconsciously, like, at the base. Richard is a hobgoblin. He is a goblin. He said, like, hey, goblins live by action. They just, they do whatever they feel. And that's kind of, I felt like, was very much the vibe of the party. It's like, Zaris, mom's gone, dad's here. It's going to be a little bit cooler, but, like, we're not going to die. Like, just keep your head on you.
Do our best to not die.
Yeah.
Ooh, really quick. The card pool.
Oh.
Since their deck's out right now. The fucking card.
Just pull her deck out.
Oh man, I really wanted to see one of our thick boys pull a card.
It seemed like first, Siegfried was going to until after he saw
what happened to you.
Well, no, I went first, and then it was kind of intriguing. But then he saw the Archfey come out, and he was kind of intrigued. But it's also like. It went from a good thing, bad thing, to, like, you summoned a freaking archfey. Like, basically, like, summoned a demigod. So it went from, like, oh, good things, bad things are happening, or, like, no, catastrophic things could happen. And I think that's what deterred him after that.
Yeah, I know after James mentioned that Siegfried was debating pulling a card, but then after both bad things happen.
Nothing really happened to Amon. It was just terrifying.
Well, it was like you get something, but then you lose something important. Yeah. And the only thing I could think of that was absolutely important was Chuck.
As soon as I read it, I was like, oh, fuck. I'm going to say no, but I want to know. What would I have gotten if I said yes?
I need to read the card again to know to remember exactly what.
Oh, if you would have said yes, you pull the top three cards and pick one.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So, like.
That's what it was.
It would have been real shitty. It would have been real shitty story wise.
Yeah.
If they were all three. But yeah, then you would have lost Chuck.
Well, imagine if you lose Chuck and then I pull three cards and they're all bad cards.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Fuck.
Like, when that. So, I had introduced Chuck, like, me and Danny know a little bit more about Chuck than the rest of the party or the whole group, but like, admittedly, when that you raised that question, I was like, I don't think Danny is going to, but I need to think of a backup plan. Yeah. Like, what do I do with Chuck's character now?
Yeah, I'm definitely not getting rid of Chuck like that anyway.
Yeah.
I do have an idea on how to make Chuck a little more involved, since he is but a bird right now, and like, he's a very smart bird.
He is but a bird.
But he is but a bird. So I think I have a few ideas for level 3 for him, just to kind of, I don't know, get him a little more
involved. Get
up in there, yeah.
Yeah.
For him to bring
that. Oh, yeah, here it is. Fae Queen offers you a trade. If you sacrifice something extraordinarily precious to you, you may look at the top three cards of the deck.
Can I look at the top three cards of the deck and see what they would have been?
I think it's still shuffled from last time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Ooh, what would they have been? This is an alternate future.
It would have been, you are cursed, permanently take a -2 penalty on saving throws.
Great.
One of it is the rogue card.
Oh.
It's a non-character player of the DM's choice becomes hostile to you.
And hates you.
The identity of your new enemy is unknown until they or someone else reveals it.
Excellent.
And then the star card. I would have taken this for sure. But
yeah, the star card.
It's increased one of your ability scores by 2 up to a maximum of 24.
But now that had been worth the check.
It's definitely not worth it. I mean, this is basically a free ABI. And so I would have just put it into intelligence.
It's even better because it's 2. Oh, yeah.
Plus two, yeah.
If you did it for one stat, yeah.
Yeah. Fuck. Man, this would...
That would have sucked.
I would have taken the star, but, like, absolutely not. Like, it's not worth it.
Not worth it, yeah.
You want to shuffle those boys up?
Yeah.
Now that we've thoroughly looked into the future.
We could pull the two that
need. Talon and...
I have to pull those out, yeah.
I just want to look at them. Because
those are disintegrated.
And I do look at the end of the Fae card. It's like, oh, yeah, she winks at Richard before he leaves. Yeah. And I was like, what's that about? Like, hey, it's a different time for a different story. Like... Which has lived long life. It's back there.
Could you imagine, though, if, like, we didn't pull anything and totally forgot about this deck, and then later on, for some reason, like, they come up, and one of us pulls Talon, and we have, like, 4 magic items.
like a future. Like, fuck. Yeah, that would have sucked.
Because, I mean, like, I don't know. I genuinely don't even know.
Best case scenario, that's one of the cards that you pulled. Like, that is...
At this time.
Yeah, because, like... If any time to pull that card now, one, it sucked a lot still, but, like, to lose just...
One item?
Staff of Healing, which my character's not a healing character anyway. Yeah. It was to kind of fill that role, but, like, luckily, it didn't matter that much.
Also, Zargus isn't a healer either. Like, I love that we were just like, no clerics.
Yeah.
No clerics. Danger.
Danger. We are on the edge at all times.
I'm on the edge.
The edge.
And I had took one, when we leveled up, I took one third level spell, and it was Mass Healing Word. But, like, that's emergency. Like, someone is on the brink of dying.
Yeah.
And, like, because it heals everyone. But it's only for a little bit. So it's like, that is, you know, adrenaline needle in case we need it. Everything else is like, it was a lot of juggling support.
Yeah. And we'll get into it probably later should the conversation go that way. But we'll get into the logistics of what happens when someone dies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, one of our characters dies, because there's, like, certain... things that we decided, right, mm-hmm. about, like, how, like, death how Revivify works. Could work. Should we encounter someone who even has Revivify? Because right now, no one has it.
Exactly. I do want to throw out, because I was thinking about this, and I don't remember now, because it was... When was it? When did we record? Wednesday?
Yeah.
I've already forgotten.
It's okay, it's in the past.
Did you get us to level 7 before we ended that episode?
I didn't say the word level 7, but also you guys would have to take a long rest before the effects.
Yes, yeah, true. So we're level 6 walking up on whatever that thing is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ruben knows what it is.
Ruben knows what it is.
I don't know what it is.
I'm surprised you don't.
Well, you're going to have to re-describe it to me, yeah. because I was also just like... Yeah. I'm done.
As soon as he started explaining to it, I was like, check. Okay, yep.
But you guys are going to have to get closer okay. to like fully investigate.
Yeah. But yeah, we're like, you guys are level 7, but you'll have to take a long rest yeah. for all the effects of level 7 to take place. So
I think it should be fine. No one's going to die. Before long rest.
Dot.
I gotta look back through my notes on what I'm doing to everybody, but it should be fine.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have any more questions?
I know.
I think I asked all of mine. Ooh, I have one just to go back to the boss fight. What if we didn't convince Tara to help?
She just wouldn't have helped. She would have. She would have started healing Polly though.
Dang.
That would have sucked.
Fucking Susano Polly with yeah. healing on top of it.
Yeah.
Could you imagine though if, like, let's say we're in the fight and she did some hit on Elias that pushed him 10 feet away from her
mm-hmm.
or something like that, where he was out of range.
It was like the gore charge or something like that. Yeah.
What if he noticed Tara healing Polly oh. and just turns on her? I would have been like, no!
That definitely would have been.
Tara is a fucking beefy cleric.
I mean, yes, but that's why I would have, like, immediately, like, in character started screaming, no!
Yeah. No, she, for all you stat nerds at home, had an armor class of 19 and 70 hit points.
Oh, fuck. Not bad.
Yeah. She was a level 11 Tempest cleric.
Ooh.
So... She's a little baddie.
Like the Deftones.
Cool. I was looking up a spell right now to see if, like, I could have done something to, like, pull somebody out of the fray, but
no. No, yeah. So, yeah, Tara was very cool. Like, honestly, Tara or Azora may or may not make an appearance in, like, one of our home games at some point if we ever...
That's fine. That's the whole point of DMing, is that, like, I know you said earlier you had a bunch of these locations that you fleshed out and never got to use.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all in your back pocket now as a DM.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you can pull those out whenever you need them.
Totally.
It's like, yeah, as you DM longer and longer, you have a lot of these things that you're like, okay, I've done this before, I know this works, or I've tried this before.
Yeah.
Like, when we did the shout out to Honeypot, we recently did a DM session over there.
That was great.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
There's one coming up that we'll probably plug at the end of this, because by the time this episode comes out, it will be...
That weekend?
That weekend, I
Hell
think.
Yeah. Excellent. But going back to that, like, I know, like, I wasn't prepared to DM, because the way we had set it up was that I would take in new players, and Danny would kind of run a session for experienced players that came with characters. But we had such a... outpouring of people, like,
and new people,
new
which was
people,
great,
which was phenomenal. I ended up having to run a thing at the end, but I did no prep. I was like, okay, you know what I have in my back pocket? I have the Two-Door Tavern,
yeah,
and then which I've used before in other games, and then I have the Macho Man Randy Savage yeah. goblin encounter. So, like, and everyone loved it. Like, I had the goblin wagon. For those who don't know, there's a book called Prepared One-Shots. I believe it's created by Kobold Press. They have a one-shot in which some goblins have taken over an overturned wagon, and the party is tasked with basically getting the goblins out of the wagon. And the little flavor I add to it, because they say that the goblins like the Russell, is that each goblin is a WWE superstar. That's partly where I got that thing for... we had done a... Royal Rumble in our home game.
In one of our home games, we did a Royal Rumble.
Yeah. And
just yeeted Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, Rey Mysterio didn't even get to participate. Neither did Randy Orton.
Or John Cena.
And I had added the character because, like, one character was like, hey, let's try to talk to these goblins. And he was like, parlay. So he got out and he's like, send a goblin out. And they did. And it's John Cena. And they're like, why did they just send this one goblin? Because, like, as soon as they started being aggressive, the goblin did the can't see me thing and then disappeared. They're like, oh, because we can't see him.
Oh shit!
Yeah, this is once you like DMs for a while, you have this repertoire of things you could just pull out, and I don't know. This has been very fun thus far. Seeing how obviously everyone saw how I played. You guys have played with me before. We're seeing how Alex plays. I've played with Danny before, but this is more of a serious storyline aspect. So we're gonna see how Danny throws it out.
I'm excited.
I'm fucking hyped.
On that note, do you have any preview of the next level?
Yeah, what can we expect, Danny?
So the first episode, I believe the way I've written it out here, it's gonna be mostly like role playing and like interacting with the level that I built. So that's why, like, unless you guys do something like very wild, the chances of you dying or like fighting something before a long rest is pretty low.
Unless.
That's always a possibility. Like, I don't know how certain characters are going to react to certain things. Oh, I got to change that, by the way.
Oh, so one of the fun things that Danny also did that I wanted to shout out is he also sent everyone, like, individualized questions.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That I'm scared about.
I'm low-key a little scared, too.
I got to review those. James, like, he messaged me at the beginning of this week, and he was like, dude, I totally forgot that you asked me these. Please hold. And, like, 2 seconds later, sent me his answers. So, now I have everyone's answers.
Yeah, you sent those to us weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. So, I gotta work those into it. Some of them are for, like, later levels, but a few of those questions are for this. And, like, you're gonna be able to tell, because you guys know exactly what this this level has to deal with. So, like, a few of those questions were kind of obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So Alex was able to pre-give us the name of Carnalia. Do you have a working title for the next level?
The name of this, I literally just had to change it because I had the wrong name on my notes. The name of this level, Terrace, is Deepstall.
Deepstall.
Yes, sir.
I love it. I love it. Awesome. Well, we want to end it here?
Yeah, we can call it here. Thank you guys so much for listening to Middle 8 Table Break. Yeah. You know, you don't have to put in effects, Ruben.
He's
going to do it anyway.
Well, this is just a regular episode. This doesn't get effects.
Also, I think...
Unless people want effects on here.
Also, I think one of us is editing it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I'm not adding effects. Sorry. I suck.
But anyway, thank you guys for listening so much. We appreciate it. I'm having a great time doing this. Like Ruben said, I think we're all really enjoying it. Kind of like now, like you guys are saying, really getting into this world and role-playing a little more. So I think it's getting more fun. Alex, would you like to plug things?
Yeah, I'm really excited to go into the world of Deepstall. I'm very sad to leave Carnalia behind, but who knows? Maybe we'll get back to it at some point. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. What to plug? You can find me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. I also host a horror podcast here on the Horrible People's Network called the Horrible People's Podcast. It is a weekly podcast where we talk about scary movies or some other piece of horror media. It's a super, super duper blast. Please check it out if you would like. Do you want me to plug the network too?
Sure, yeah, plug the network.
Do everything.
The Turning Tables Horrible People's Podcast is also under the Horrible People's Network umbrella. You can follow Horrible People's Network on Instagram at HORRORBLE People's Network. There are 4 podcasts for you to enjoy from the network thus far. More are coming soon.
We're working on them. They're on the way.
Stay tuned for that. This weekend, May 21st, if you liked what you heard today, feel free to check out us live and in person. Woo! At Honey Pot Meadery. We're going to be playing D&D with some of you fine folks. So if you want to come play with us, check us out.
It's in Anaheim.
So, like, if you have to be, like, local to Anaheim. But, hey, if you want to make the trip, more power to you.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Those three people in, like, what, Singapore? Sorry. Yeah,
our German fans, please come out.
Yeah. Obviously, those are for our local folk. And then someone else plugged Turning Tables, the actual, like, our socials. I just plugged everything.
Everyone's got it.
Okay. I volunteer as tribute. Hello, help. My name is Ruben. I am also known as the Blue Collar Sad Boy. You can find me on Instagram at REC Matrix. If you like music, if you like raccoons, if you like nerdy stuff, I do all those things. But
I forgot to tell you, I saw so many raccoons when I was in Mexico.
Fuck yes.
Like just like they were scampering around, hanging from the trees, like on their stomachs, just like with their arms like hanging down.
Like a sloth.
Like just hanging over the tree. Yeah. I love it.
I totally forgot to take photos, but it was like the coolest thing ever, and I was just like, Robin!
They have personalities, people. If you like lifting weights and in blue collar work, that's the kind of stuff I do. You can find me on, the only one I'm really headlining is Turning Tables. So Turning Tables Podcast, that is Turning Tables Pod on Instagram. And then we have a Twitter, yes?
We have Twitter.
Yeah, it's TTD&D Pod at Twitter.
Okay, yeah, I don't use Twitter, so I don't know how to do it.
As soon as I said you would do it, I was like, I don't remember the Twitter.
Yeah, I saw you look at me just like, help.
I think Twitter is just what the birds be doing outside.
They be tweeting.
Yeah. That's me.
Again, my name is Danny. I host a podcast on the Horrible People's Network as well called Turning... Oh, no, sorry. I just wanted to see what you would say.
Nani?
It's called Hops and Notes. We talk about music. We drink beer. We bullshit. I've had Alex and Ruben on there for a few episodes.
Woo. Yeah.
This comes out when... Wu-Tang comes out.
Wu-Tang?
This comes out. I have the calendar pulled up right now. No, it doesn't.
2 weeks?
It comes out in 2 weeks. So this comes out right the week after
Wu-Tang. Yeah, so Wu-Tang will be coming out. It would have come out last week. But next week, Ruben and I do a banger and we get lit.
We get pretty drunk.
I'm excited for it because it was a great time talking about it and recording that episode. You can find that on Instagram at Hops and Notes Pod. And, I think that's it, right?
That's so many plugs, guys. I think that's enough.
All the outlets have something in them. We're a fire hazard because we have that fire.
The power's out. thank you. Good night. God bless America. USA.
USA. USA. USA. USA.